on WPVMFM.org and on Alexa. Just tell Alexa to play WPVM Radio.
This is WPVM 103.7 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. Hello and welcome to A Better World on WPVM. My name is McNair Ezard and I'm your host for today's show. We come to you every Thursday afternoon from 5 to 6 p.m. at 103.7 on your FM dial, or you can stream us at WPVMFM.org. Each week, we take an in-depth look at the people and organizations locally, nationally, and internationally who are working to create a world that works for everyone, whether it be those who are working in the areas of hunger and poverty, economic and social justice, healthcare, education, housing, restoration of the environment, or those people and organizations who bring a fresh perspective to spirituality. A Better World features positive interviews with people who are making a difference. And joining us today is Dr. Jeffrey Long. He's the author of the New York Times bestseller, Evidence of the Afterlife, and that came out in 2011. And more recently, author of God and the Afterlife, the groundbreaking new evidence for God and near-death experience. Dr. Long is the founder of the Near Death Experience Research Foundation, and he's a physician and radiation oncologist. Dr. Long, thank you for being with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. I appreciate you taking the time out to speak with us. So first of all, tell me, how did you get interested in the field of near-death experiences?
Yeah, you know, McNair, interesting story. Decades ago, while I was in my residency training for my medical specialty of radiation oncology, I was going through one of the world's most prestigious medical journals, the Journal of the American Medical Association, looking for a cancer-related article. Completely by accident, I found an article that had as its title, including the phrase near-death experience. And I paused. Everything in my medical training had suggested, well, you're dead or you're not dead. What's this near-death experience? So puzzled at the title, I read the article and was immediately fascinated. Here were people all around the world having these fascinated experiences, strikingly similar, or wherever on the world they were and whatever the circumstances of their death was. So immediately, I remember thinking somewhat prophetically, good gosh, why aren't more people researching these fascinating experiences? So I was hooked, started reading more and more about that, finally set up my research website, and ultimately led to the books that you've just described.
So as a physician, were you initially skeptical at all about the validity of NDEs?
Oh, absolutely. It seems inconceivable to me as a doctor. I mean, I've literally been with people when they've died and tried to resuscitate them. And, you know, when you're near death, there's a coma. It seems inconceivable to me that someone who is unconscious, and by the very dictionary definition means no possible conscious experience, having these highly vivid, lucent, organized, very consistent experiences. So in a way, I was, one of the all-time great skeptics. I set up a website as much as anything to see for myself by getting information from firsthand sources, that is those who actually had their near-death experience. So I could see for myself and answer that question burning in my mind, are these experiences for real?
What now, what about your research, though, into near-death experiences? Has that influenced your personal attitude about death?
Absolutely. It has changed me enormously from what I've learned during my near-death experience research. I'm a much more compassionate and courageous physician. McNair, I treat people that are fighting life-threatening illnesses, cancer, and cancer is a scary word for everybody, and many people don't make it. They'll ultimately succumb to their illness, but I've been able to work now more than ever with patients and their family facing this devastating illness. much more courage, much more positivity, knowing that those people that die an earthly death are ultimately going to be in an afterlife, a wonderful afterlife, and that that's the heritage for all of us.
Did you, prior to beginning your research, did you believe in an afterlife?
I think maybe just tangentially. I think it was more wishful thinking. I recognized that my belief in an afterlife was not based on evidence, unlike everything else that I'd learned in medical school and subsequently to that. So it was kind of a sort of using two different parts of my mind, but that's all changed now with the evidence that I have, which, by the way, has stood the test of time over many years and many debates. We now have very strong evidence from near-death experiences that there is indeed an afterlife, that's a reality and a reality for all of us.
You know, it's interesting. I read in some of the material that you had provided for me that seems that NDEs have been reported as far back as Plato, but it seems like, to my mind, maybe I'm incorrect about this, but more so over the last 30 or so years, there's been an increase in NDE information available to the public. Has this increase been solely because of advances in resuscitation techniques, or are there other reasons why we're hearing more about these NDEs these days?
Yeah, and that's a great question. Certainly, there's many factors, and the fact that we're bringing more people back from the brink of death with our modern resuscitation efforts is certainly an excellent example. I think another major factor, at least in centuries prior to this one, is that people just simply didn't believe it, or they would be afraid to share stories that would be at odds of prevailing and powerful religious organizations of their time. They might have literally feared to share it with anybody else. The experiences were so unworldly and so unknown that people were just reluctant to share them. In fact, we saw that prior for people that shared their near-death experiences even today. If it happened prior to 1975, when near-death experiences were first described and the public became aware, over and over we hear how they just were very reluctant to share with anybody because they're so unworldly, so seemingly impossible. They recognize that people wouldn't believe them, or worse yet, would think they're crazy. That's all history now. Near-death experiences are for real. They're widely accepted as experiences that can happen to about 10 to 20% of people who nearly die. And people that have them, if there's one thing that is unequivocally proven, they're not crazy. They're normal, everyday people.
Mm-hmm. Are NDEs more common to people with certain causes of death, for instance, like heart attacks or drug overdoses, or more than so like long-term illnesses?
Yeah, again, about 10 to 20% of people that have a cardiac arrest, which just means that their heart stops beating, will have a near-death experience. About the only strong correlate that research has identified is that, interestingly, those closer to death, those that had the longer duration of their heart stopping, those that were even closer to death's door, are actually more likely to have a near-death experience, which is just further evidence that this isn't due to brain function as we understand it. I mean, think about that. Those that are unconscious longer, more severely in a coma, those that should be less likely to have a lucid, organized experience at that point in time, actually, with regard to near-death experiences, they're more likely to come back and share a near-death experience.
So tell us about your first book, Evidence of the Afterlife.
Sure. In that book, I found 9 lines of evidence for the reality of near-death experience and for its consistent message that there's an afterlife. This, like I said, this evidence has withstood the test of time. I think any one of these lines of evidence is convincing to many people, but by the time you have this many lines of evidence, I think we've really, at least from my point of view, established the reality of near-death experiences and its messages. I would add, McNair, that the strength of the evidence for the reality of near-death experience is actually above and beyond that lines of evidence that we use to make daily cancer treatment decisions. So it is strong with that order of magnitude of strength.
Now, are the lines of evidence, is that the same thing as what you call 12 common elements that people share?
And actually, that's different. 12 common elements that people share are what actually happens during a near-death experience. Yeah. And we might talk about that briefly. No,
sure.
Two near-death experiences are the same. And I've studied over 4,000. And yet, again, no two of them are the same. And again, while you see, if you study many, many near-death experiences, both me and other researchers find very similar patterns that are very consistently observed in different studies of near-death experience and actually tend to occur in very consistent order during a near-death experience. For example, there's that life-threatening event, so an unconsciousness and often clinical death, absent heartbeat. So at that point in time, consciousness may separate from the body. Their consciousness goes above their physical body, and from that vantage point, they can see ongoing earthly events, which may include even their own frantic efforts at resuscitation by others. They then may pass into or through a tunnel. At the end of the tunnel, there's a brilliant, beautiful, mystical light that's often encountered. At that time, they're in an unearthly realm. There may be beautiful landscapes. They describe colors that are beautiful beyond anything on earth, music that is unearthly in its beauty. There may be buildings and other people. In fact, at that time, they may encounter deceased loved ones that they knew on earth, and these are joyous reunions, a great deal of communication. They may see all or a portion of their prior life at a time called a life review. At this time, they're typically having overwhelmingly positive emotions. In fact, McNair, the two most common words used to describe a near-death experience are love and peace. This is what they feel intensely. And then often at the end of the experience, there's a so-called boundary, stream, creek, chasm, something that they can't cross. And there often they make a decision at that point, often with others, about whether they're going to stay in that beautiful, unearthly realm or if they're going to return and continue their earthly life. That's a, if you will, in a nutshell, a somewhat detailed near-death experience would have those elements.
So is that final decision about whether to stay on the other side or not, are they given free will, do you think, or are they kind of pushed to return?
Yeah, good question. Now, the majority, I want to emphasize, people having a near-death experience don't really have a choice. They're simply sent back to their body involuntarily. But a minority of the near-death experiences do describe that discussion or decision, typically with others around them. Interestingly, McNair, even though they've lived years to decades on Earth and that everything they knew up until that life-threatening event was their prior earthly life, even with that history, when they're faced with a choice about coming back to their earthly life or staying in this beautiful unearthly realm, the substantial majority want to stay in that realm. They want to end their earthly life. There's often a great deal of interesting discussion that goes on, consideration about what they could do if they go back and live their life. And then ultimately, those people that are given a choice do ultimately decide, and often very reluctantly, yes, they'll return to their life. And when they recover from their close brush with death, they're ready to share their near-death experience.
In June 2017, your second book came out, God and the Afterlife. What led to you wanting to do the second book?
Yeah, as we literally thousands of near-death experiences rolled in, I was very impressed at how often people that had a near-death experience described becoming aware of or even directly encountering God, and that's their word, God. And the accounts were so remarkable and so fascinating that I felt it would be appropriate to ask some survey questions in the most recent survey that we have on our website of people that had a near-death experience about possible encounters with God. I was astounded to see when we asked that critical survey question during your experience, did you encounter any specific information or awareness that God or a supreme being either does exist or does not exist? 45.5% answered yes. Only 14.8% said uncertain, and about 40% said no. There was a text box response following that, and it was extremely obvious that everybody answering yes meant yes to the question that they really did encounter specific information or awareness that God or a supreme being existed. That was an astoundingly high percentage to me. I then, following that, looked at 277 near-death experiences that described an awareness or encounter with God that occurred specifically during their near-death experiences, not their thoughts or belief during their earthly life before or after their NDE, but very clearly only while they were unconscious or physically dead and having a near-death experience. And to put it mildly, that was fascinating.
Well, in some of the material I read, there something like 86% increase in those who believe that God definitely exists after the NDE compared to a 39% prior to the NDE?
Oh, there's no question about that. We asked about people, and you're absolutely right. We asked about people's belief in God prior to their near-death experience and then afterwards, and a whopping percentage, as you note, came back and said, wow, now I get it. I absolutely believe that God exists, not with doubt, not based on faith, but based on personal experience. And so that's one of the more striking changes in people's beliefs that they have after a near-death experience.
You're listening to A Better World on 103.7 WPVM, and we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org. And if you just joined us, we're talking to Dr. Jeffrey Long. He's the author of the New York Times bestseller, Evidence of the Afterlife and God and the Afterlife, the groundbreaking new evidence for God and near-death experience.
My sweet Lord, I really want to see you, really want to be with you, really want to see you, Lord, but it takes so long.
Dr. Long, when you were setting up the research for, I believe you refer to it as the God study, were you trying to verify beliefs of any particular religion?
Heck no. In fact, I was very specifically just looking for the facts. As a researcher and a doctor that treats cancer, I make my decisions and my study is based strictly on facts. I was really going to let what the findings of the study led me to, you know, whatever I would think about God in near-death experiences. And don't forget, we have over 4,000 near-death experiences posted. If I got it wrong in my conclusion about God and near-death experiences, believe me, there'd be a lot of other people that would read exactly the same material and point out the error of my research. I've heard from nobody about that. I think I really nailed it. Mm-hmm. Very, very careful as I did this study, not only looking at the material from the survey in my own website, but also looking at God in other near-death experiences posted on other websites. I actually invoked my son to sort of do a separate independent study and see what he could find, and then actually sent 50 of these accounts to somebody who's somewhat professionally studies spiritual content of experiences. And every source that I could possibly come to, all four of those sources converged on exactly the findings that are in my book. In fact, it'd be important to note with regard to validating religion that God, when God is encountered in near-death experiences, essentially never validates any religious belief on earth. There seems to be God is, sort of embraces whatever we want to think about God in religion on earth. The number one message by far that people brought back from the near-death experience that encountered God was that God loves us all for who we are, what we are, and everything that we are, and whatever we believe.
It's interesting. One time I was speaking with Raymond Moody, who, as you know, is a longtime NDE researcher, and he told me of the NDE of a fundamentalist minister who had died and had an experience. And he said that during his NDE, he went back and he saw a moment when he was a fundamentalist minister, and he went back and he saw a moment when he was delivering a hellfire and damnation sermon from his pulpit. And he wasn't watching it from his personal point of view, but he was watching it from the consciousness of a little 9-year-old boy in the congregation. And he felt the fear of that little boy towards what the minister was saying. And there was a presence, he said, with him that he identified as Christ. And he had the thought from this being that, I suspect you won't be saying those things anymore, will you? And it was interesting. When he came back, he said, I was very surprised to learn that God wasn't interested in my theology.
Yeah, that's a very dramatic story that absolutely drives home the point of what I also found in my research of 277 near-death experiences that encountered God. No, they weren't really interested in theology. God, like I say, loves everybody for who they are, what they are, regardless of what their belief is in religion, lack of belief in religion, age, gender, anything, social status. Children encountered God in near-death experiences, adults, the religious, even atheists. So it's God's the number one message by far is when God's encountered is that God loves us completely, wholly, and for who we are. And that right there is perhaps the most powerful message that God seems to have for us in near-death experiences.
So along those lines, I mean, do you have any idea of what the reception to that idea has been from, say, the fundamentalist Christian community. You know, you've mentioned that God loves everyone regardless of their religious belief or their sexual identity or social status. I could see where some folks might have an issue with that.
Yeah, I've actually talked at some fundamentalist churches and some non-fundamentalist churches, and actually a fair number. Remarkably, when people hear this, you know, certainly there's some people that may question that, but they can't question my research. I mean, I can literally say, look, here are all the near-death experiences posted. You can go read the source of the original material just like I can. This is what near-death experiences say. People in general don't seem to quibble. I think when I share this type of material with any kind of a church, it seems to resonate much more with them than it tends not to. People tend to get it. They tend to understand that love of God. One thing you can always say is that this is God during near-death experiences. I mean, these people, 100% of them, came back and continued their earthly life. Would an encounter with God be different from somebody who permanently, irrevocably died? I would like to think not, but, you know, certainly yeah. The conventionally religious may say, well, that may be God in a very different way. Maybe God's just trying to encourage us to do better in our earthly life with this message, but you know, personally, I don't think so. I think we're really seeing very deeply and very consistently the profoundly, overwhelmingly, literally unearthly love that God has for each and every one of us. And I really think that's God, whether you're encountering God in a near-death experience or whether you encounter God at the end of your life after permanent, irreversible death.
Now, the survey in the book, you talked about the 420 respondents. How did you end up with 420? What's the significance of that number, if any?
Yeah, that was the we had 420 people that these were 420 people from the survey of those that encountered God. This was 400. It was the most recent version of our website survey, and I closed accrual after we had 420 responses, and that was out of that population that 45.5% said that they were aware of specific information or awareness that God exists. Of the same survey, 420 near-death experiencers, again, from the most recent version of my survey, that was actually a higher percentage than those that said they encountered a tunnel, met or were aware of deceased people, or had, if you will, life review. So interestingly, and unreported up until this time, is the substantially common it is for people to encounter or be aware of God during a near-death experience. Researchers just weren't aware that happens that often until this survey.
Mm-hmm. So how did people describe God? You go over some of that in your book.
Sure. The number one thing, God can be, certainly with regard to God and his appearance, you certainly have to remember that God is not physical. This, when you're in a near-death experience, is not a independent earthly physical realm that is separate. It's a very non-physical realm. Many rules that we know in our earthly life don't apply. For example, they virtually always say that time, as we know it on Earth, doesn't exist there, or at least is radically altered during a near-death experience. That's almost uniform. God's appearance can be variable. It seems that God can choose any appearance that God wants to in a near-death experience, most commonly described as light, often a light with a sense of a profoundly loving presence. It can appear more humanoid in some ways, or may just be simply felt or sensed as a presence. They know for sure that it's God, but there's just not a visual or auditory cue. And at other times, they simply hear what they know to be God, but are not actually seeing God. So God can present in a variety of different ways.
And what kind of qualities in terms of compassion or love? Or
sure. The interesting thing is that what has been sort of a classic theological concept of God was certainly present in my research, which was interesting, although the religions that these people had in these near-death experiences all over the map. Again, as we've said, number one thing they described was all loving. Certainly, and that, if you will, is the classic theological term omnibenevolence. Omnipotence means, you know, unlimited power, and people became aware of God's, often described God's enormous ability to create to make things happen, just literally type a power, but not really a power that is to be feared, but as a power to, you know, if you will, respect or be aware that, that is God's role. Another thing that is a classic concept of God is omniscience, which is just a fancy way of saying infinite knowledge. Many near-death experiencers were aware that God was, certainly compared to our earthly knowledge, overwhelmingly knowledgeable. In fact, many near-death experiencers, those that do or do not encounter God, are aware during their near-death experience of what's called universal knowledge, knowing everything all about the universe and how it all fits together, vastly more than we could in our earthly life. Essentially, always, they cannot retain any of that knowledge when they return to their body. One near-death experiencer very interestingly said it was like trying to put an ocean of knowledge into the teacup that's our earthly brain. But, you know, God, omniscience, I think that's it. And another very interesting thing, omnipresence, that means God is present everywhere. And that seemed to be very common awareness among those that encountered God, that there seemed to be a very mystical, very real connection of everyone and everything, and that's all of us on the world, to God at a level that's much more than we're here and God's there. But there seems to be that connection, and often the word unity was used, which is surprising here, and certainly you're not aware of that typically during your earthly life, but people very commonly describe that awareness when they had their near-death experience, and that's not classic, at least Western religious teaching, mm-hmm. but that was that awareness of that mystical connection, even unity with God, was actually the number two most common thing that people expressed, very, very strongly felt by vast numbers of those having near-death experiences.
Did it give them any sense of unity with other people, like family members or when they came back?
Oh, absolutely. They were aware during that time, quote, time, unquote, during the near-death experience where they were with God, that they were connected and that they were also a part of that, also a part of everything. And it's very interesting to hear people come back. Sometimes they have that very strong presence of connection, of unity, even after they return. It may fade over hours to days, but it's very interesting to describe their life following a near-death experience. I mean, it's that awareness, and it's not even awareness, it's literally a knowing. They're clear that that is a part of reality, and they can be aware of that in their earthly life for a while. But shoot, you know, McNair, in our earthly life here, where it's like you're here, you know, that's there, there's sort of, you really have much more a sense of disconnection and disunity with everything around us. And so you could certainly understand how near-death experiencers sort of lose that strong sense of unity of all shortly after their experience is over.
Well, Dr. Long, what do you think the results of your research have to tell people who are grieving the death of a loved one?
Yeah, that's extremely important. I hear a lot from people that are grieving the death of a loved one. Here on Earth, there's when a loved one is lost, it's a very common concern. Where are they? Are they okay now that they've died? And every shred of evidence from my own and all other near-death experience comes to a overwhelming conclusion, and that is that those who have died in their earthly life are in a much better place than you and I. They're in that unearthly heavenly realm where there is no misery, where there is no pain. There is none of that illness, that which kills us on our earthly life, and we'll all be together again. That we'll be, for a while, we'll be separate from our loved ones, but that our real destiny is to have that eternal life all together, even as unified, connected, and we will certainly be reunited with our loved ones. And it's interesting, too, when someone died on Earth from a debilitating or disfiguring chronic illness, when they're encountered, when a deceased loved one is encountered during the near-death experience, they're always whole, disease-free. They may even appear considerably younger than they were at the time of their death. Interestingly, McNair, if someone died in early infancy and that infant is encountered by a parent during a near-death experience, they're often many, many years older, and they're actually a child by that point in time. But these are very powerful accounts of people that encounter their loved ones, and a powerful message of hope and reassurance for all of us that worry about losing a loved one or actually have. Interestingly, one of the strongest arguments about that atheists bring up is, well, you know, if all of this religion stuff is real, you know, let's all pray for people that have lost a leg and see if they'll regrow a leg or an arm. I will tell you, we've encountered many near-death experiences where in life they had an arm or a leg or even many limbs missing, and every single time that these deceased loved ones are encountered in a near-death experience, all of their limbs are intact.
Okay, let me take a break here. We're pushing at half past the hour, and if you just joined us, we're having a conversation with Dr. Jeffrey Long, and you're listening to us on 103.7 WPVM, and we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org. And we'll return with Dr. Long in just a few minutes after this musical break.
Stay here in heaven.
Okay, welcome back. That was Tears in Heaven. That was from Eric Clapton from his album Complete Clapton that was released in 2007. And this is McNair Ezard, and from 5 to 6 p.m. every Thursday on WPVM, we feature conversations with people who are working in the areas of hunger and poverty, economic and social justice, healthcare, education, housing, restoration of the environment, or those people and organizations who bring a fresh perspective to spirituality. And today we've got as our guest Dr. Jeffrey Long. He's the author of the New York Times bestseller Evidence of the Afterlife that came out in 2011. And more recently, that came out in paperback, is God and the Afterlife, the groundbreaking new evidence for God and near-death experience. Dr. Long, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, which you talk about in your book, many people often wonder about it, is purpose, the purpose of life. And in the book, you talk about how people received information during their NDE about the purpose of life. Could you speak about that, please?
Yeah, this is very interesting. Again, another survey question I have in the most recent version of my survey of those that had near-death experiences, asked them very directly, did you get any information during your near-death experience about Earth's meaning and purpose? And the fascinating finding from all that is that a surprisingly high percentage of people said that yes, they actually encountered such information. And then we had a text box following the question where they could actually share that. As an overview, one of the most common by far responses about what we're doing here, what's important for our earthly purpose, is love. Love of ourselves, loves of other people, love of the earth that we reside in. And that seemed to be, lessons about love, learning about love and growing in love seems to be one of the strongest purposes. Remarkably, almost never did people get a specific vocation. In other words, go become a teacher, go become a doctor. Vanishingly rare, although on rare times that has actually been an insight. People also seem to come back with the importance of relationships. Again, sort of tying into that of love, but relationships, again, with other people around them, and very important relationships of people in the family, particularly relationships with children, seem to be a very important part of our earthly purpose. Others go on to say that a meaning and purpose of our life is to learn. We need to grow. We need to come to understand. And that all seems to be very, very important, too. It's notable when people have that information about meaning and purpose. Again, almost never is there specific information. We just don't see that go forth and build an ark next year. But it's just sort of some general pointers about some things, and certainly the overriding message of all when people encounter such information is that, in an earth where there's nihilism, depression, anxieties, frustrations, and certainly difficulties, it's very reassuring to know that uniformly from near-death experiencers, when they encounter that information, that yes, absolutely, our earthly life is extremely meaningful, extremely important. And it's all vital that we stay here. There's a real meaning to our earthly life at every step of the way, even if our earthly life is very, very difficult.
I would think that message could be especially important for people who might be contemplating suicide.
And that's a real good point. Absolutely it is. We have a number of people that have near-death experiences as a consequence of a suicide attempt. And interestingly, when they come back and have, of those that attempt suicide and have a near-death experience, they almost never attempt suicide again because during their near-death experience, it's so common for them to understand that their suicide attempt was a huge mistake, that they really did try to end their life that was meaningful, purposeful, and no matter how difficult it is, it's still very, very important for them. And so if for people that attempt suicide and don't have a near-death experience, they're strongly predisposed to attempt suicide again, but not if they had a near-death experience. Mm. They learn that important lesson about their earthly life, and that is probably the single most important factor that keeps virtually all of them from attempting suicide again. Mm-hmm. And I would emphasize, just while we're on the topic, it's absolutely nobody should attempt to harm themselves in an effort to have a near-death experience. If they're depressed, if they're having difficulties in life, there's many, many opportunities of people that can talk with them. Counseling is available. But absolutely, one should never try to harm oneself to have a near-death experience. Those that have tried suicide know what a mammoth mistake it is.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. You know, I, along this idea of purpose, I thought it interesting in reading one of the respondents' quotes in the book that talked about their experience of God and what it meant for their life. And they said, the only things that are worthwhile are those that reinforce one's connection to God, and the things that humans pursue on earth are mostly pointless and meaningless.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and that's true. God in near-death experiences is often synonymous with love. So the pursuit of God, you know, you could almost read that as, you know, learning more about love, increasing the love in our life is certainly, and God and the ultimate manifestation of love is certainly a critical part of our importance of pursuing the things in life. What they're referring to, and again, this is based on, you know, reading thousands of near-death experiences, what they're referring to for the earthly pursuits are things like materialist things, you know, a bigger house, a fancier car. Near-death experiencers, when they have their experience and have learned from it, they tend to become much less materialistic. They may change jobs into positions where they can actually help people, you know, as opposed to, you know, running the rat race of society the way we have it today. But from a near-death experiencer's wisdom, you know, there's certainly a lot that seems to be the norm that we pursue in our earthly lives. It really is a lot less important than we're thinking.
And you've, in the interview today, you've talked about people's religious belief systems. Did you notice in the results from the surveys, did it, people with a religious belief system, did it tend to make them more exclusive or more fanatical in their beliefs or more accepting of religious differences?
Yeah, great question. The most recent version of the survey breaks down, sort of categorizes religions into the sort of the major subtypes of religions around the world. And there's also, they can share a comment box about that. People that have a near-death experience, about 50-55% will stay in the religious categorization that they were before. Another 50-55% will change, and there's a trend for them, and actually a fairly strong trend for them after their experience, to describe themselves as more spiritual and less religious. From some of those that, in fact, some people will walk away from religions that they come to believe are harmful or really don't embrace. I mean, if you imagine, go to a house of worship and say, geez, I had a near-death experience and I've learned all these insights, and have people tell them, nah, you know you did and it's not real. I mean, obviously, when near-death experiencers have their NDEs, and that's the most powerful, profound spiritual experience in their life, they're going to want to seek out places of worship, groups where that's accepted. And so they tend to be more, if you will, spiritual, less than religious. Some people go to church more often. They tend to go to church less often. But again, it's all over the map. You really can't have any single specific statement on what near-death experiencers do as far as changing their religious beliefs. And some don't change at all. So it's really, once again, all over the map, with a strong tendency toward more spiritual, open, and encompassing beliefs. They certainly become much more aware and accepting of other people's religious beliefs much more than they did before, certainly much less judgmental.
Did your survey ask about the religious background of the respondents?
Yes, it did. Mm-hmm. Yep, we had Hindu, Muslim, Protestant, Catholic, Jehovah's Witness. And we actually had a fairly detailed breakdown like that into what their religious categories were.
Okay.
So we had that drilled down pretty well. And then we actually asked it twice. We say, what was your religious background at the time of your near-death experience? And then ask the same question with the same categories. What is your religious background now, which is the time they shared their near-death experience, which is an average of about 20 years after it happened?
For people who had a religious background and the different religious backgrounds like Buddhist or Hindu or Christian, did their experience of God differ or was it similar?
Yeah, that's a good question. I looked as hard as I could to see if religious background would influence what they were seeing about God. First of all, there was so much consistency described with when God was encountered or when they were aware of God, that it was, you know, that made it a little difficult to say, well, here's some differences in how they became aware of God, and we can correlate that with religions, they were just so strikingly similar in their descriptions of God. So the bottom line is, I really couldn't find any difference in how God was described or how God was experienced, regardless of religious background. And in fact, well, the one striking difference being atheists. We have a small population of people who self-described themselves as atheist at the time they had their experience. Now, good gosh, from an atheist point of view, God cannot exist, no way, no how. And yet, these atheists encountered God. All but one of this people that were atheists ceased being atheists after their near-death experience.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
What about other aspects of the NDE experience? Did it vary based on religious conditioning, background?
No. Again, we even have very small... here's a good line of evidence that's directly relevant to that. As part of my research, I looked at very young children. These were age 5 and younger. And actually, the average group age was about 3.5 years old. Now, children that young, they have almost no formed beliefs about religion. They don't understand religion, death. They've almost certainly never heard of a near-death experience. And yet, when I compared the elements, that being what happened during the near-death experience with that group, with all other near-death experiencers, that being all older children and results, they were identical. There seemed to be no statistical difference. So, from that line of evidence and from other lines of evidence, it seems fairly clear that prior religious belief doesn't significantly, I won't say doesn't influence at all, but certainly does not seem to significantly influence the content of a near-death experience. I mean, which is really amazing when you think about it. I mean, gosh, McNair, you could be a Hindu in India, a Muslim in Egypt, or a Christian in the United States, but wherever you stand on the planet, if you have a near-death experience, the content's going to be strikingly similar. Mm,
interesting.
And I pray to the Creator.
If you just joined us, you're listening to a conversation with Dr. Jeffrey Long, author of the paperback that was released in 2017, God in the Afterlife, the groundbreaking new evidence for God and near-death experience. And you're listening to us on A Better World at 103.7 FM and streaming live at WPVMFM.org.
Of each person. Yeah.
Dr. Long, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, did NDEers, people who had near-death experience, did they have anything to say as regards the idea of the continuity of life, that life goes on after death?
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the most common things that people are aware of during a near-death experience, is that in this unearthly, many call it a heavenly realm, they come to understand that's their real home. They come to understand that all of us on earth here are actually eternal spiritual beings. It's as if our real eternal self or being is in that unearthly heavenly realm. And we're literally spiritual beings having an earthly life here, and that's a microcosm of our eternal existence. So they come to very strongly believe that, and in fact, many near-death experiencers have that sense when they're in that unearthly heavenly realm. And I mean, imagine, here's deceased loved ones, the colors that are so beautiful, they have no correlate on earth, beautiful music, fantastic buildings. I mean, all of that sounds amazing. And yet, it is so common when near-death experiencers suddenly find themselves in that realm that they have a very powerful sense that now they're home. This is their real home. They realize it wasn't their earthly life that they'd known for years or decades. It's really that unearthly realm, and they really feel connected and a part of that, and that's another reason that they're so hesitant to leave that if they have a choice to at the end of their near-death experience. So no question, very powerful evidence from near-death experiences that there is an absolutely beautiful afterlife for you, me, each one of the listeners, and everybody on the planet. And that is one of the most powerful, positive, and significant messages, I think, that we have from near-death experience.
Did you find anywhere in your studies people, evidence of, say, reincarnation?
Yeah, interestingly, I just started doing some research on that once again, because many people, we talk briefly about what's called a life review, where they see a portion or all of their prior earthly life. At that time, a number of near-death experiencers described having awareness of a life prior to their earthly life, and sometimes many, many lives. They were very vividly described, and you know, you and I wouldn't believe it if you had 10 different people that said, yes, I was Cleopatra in a former life. That's not what they're describing. They describe very mundane, down-to-earth, if you will, nothing special prior lives that could be decades to centuries ago. And in fact, I've done a little bit of research on some of the things that they've shared, and they seem to be grippingly realistic. For example, we had a person describe life in a walled medieval city. And if you ever think it's anything like Disney with towering grand castles, let me tell you what they described in their NDE that was reality. These were cramped, filthy, dirty cities that were walled in to keep them safe from hostile forces all around them. They stunk bad. There would be, you know, the mentally ill, the desperate, the starving, the disease. I mean, it was just, it's horrible what they were describing in their near-death experience. But McNair, that's what life really was, even though many people today don't really think of it that way. Mm-hmm. And it was just gripping how they described what life really is like back in that medieval era compared to the romanticized views often touted today.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Do you see another book coming out?
Yep, sure do. I've been so busy professionally here. It's been so hard to do any research, but I keep at it whenever I have some spare time and keep going. So I'll absolutely have some more books, and we'll be talking a little bit about reincarnation at mm-hmm. that time too, and that will be fascinating.
You mentioned about the life review, and I want to ask you a question tied with that about, as you know, people often expressed, according to your work, feelings of regret and shame as they reviewed what happened. You know, perhaps they behaved badly or hurt someone else. Was there any sense of judgment from God, and how does forgiveness tie into that experience for them?
Yeah, that's a great one. I mean, forgiveness is almost a non-word in near-death experiences, and the reason of that is simple. There's absolutely, virtually never any sense of external judgment when they're having a life review. Now, there's often other beings around, and it could be God, but when they're seeing part or all of their prior life, well, shoot, McNair, all of us have done things we're not proud of. Me too. So, you know, everybody's going to see, when they see all of their prior life, they're going to see some things that, you know, where they were unloving, where they hurt some other people, either intentionally or unintentionally. And what's fascinating in near-death experiences is, if there's any judgment to be made or opinion about their prior life actions, it is only from the person who had the near-death experience looking at their own life. Whether it's God or other beings around them, they essentially never have a sense of external judgment. So I think, if without that judgment, there's, you know, not really a concept of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. But that is very striking, and certainly to many near-death experiencers, a very unexpected thing that happens during a near-death experience.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Long, I would imagine one of the biggest impacts that having an NDE could have on a person is on his or her fear of death. Could you talk about that, please?
Absolutely. Those that have near-death experiences almost uniformly lose their fear of death, at least their fear of death in the sense of not knowing what happens next. With an absent fear of death, with an absence of worry about what lies beyond, they're typically able to live their life more openly, more honestly, more courageously. They're literally, with just that one bit of insight, profoundly changed people that can reach out to themselves and others more lovingly and more courageously than they ever could before.
And personally, did you ever have a fear of death, and has your research affected that at all?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think I had at least some fear of death prior to beginning my research. I mean, you know, it's mysterious. You know, you worry, you don't know. But now with my research, I'm absolutely convinced, based on evidence, that our earthly life is not the end, that it is, in reality, a beginning of a wonderful afterlife for us all.
What about the people, respondents that reported having perhaps a frightening or negative experience? Say, I don't know if they like with hell or something like that. Could you talk about that?
Yeah. During frightening is a subjective experience. For example, we had a near-death experiencer who coded and had their consciousness above their body in the ambulance speeding to the hospital, and angels appeared. Now, I think most people would say, oh, wow, that's great, that's fantastic, but the person was frightened by these angels and was batting at them. So technically, that's a frightening experience. So that's a, you know, sort of an anecdote. We have to be, you know, frightening is just something that's so unexpected. The deeper in an NDE, you almost never hear sensations of fright. Mm. Now, one thing that is objectively frightening are the near-death experiences that are aware of or actually encounter hellish realms. And I have about 1% of near-death experiences are solidly documented as being aware of or encountered in hellish realms. Now, the reason I don't refer to those as negative experiences is that the significant majority of people, even that face horrific hellish realms during their near-death experience, often come back after they recover and have typically years to think about it. They typically become aware that they had some very critical things they needed to change in their life, very important issues, you know, judgmentalness, angerness, unloving behaviors, and they will come to recognize the only way that they could have thought about, confronted, and changed for the better these earthly behaviors they had was, well, if you get a kick in the butt by having that kind of extremely frightening near-death experience. These people change. They have the same positive after effects that we call them as people that have pleasant near-death experiences. And me, these people, that even those that have hellish near-death experiences, and best of my knowledge, all near-death experience researchers, none of us believe that any of us are fated for an involuntary permanent hell when we die.
I imagine that's hopeful for a lot of people, or could be.
Yep.
Just got a couple of minutes left here, Dr. Long. What do you have any thoughts about? What do you hope people will get from your books?
Yeah, I think there's certainly a profound message of hope, certainly a profound message about the importance of love, God's love for all of us, and literally we have that strong relationship with God, you know, which really changes thoughts about humankind's relationship. We have that connection, some would call a unity with each other that prior to my book, where there was really not a lot of good evidence on. I mean, there were some lines of religious or philosophical belief where that was a matter of faith or a matter of testimony. But here we have hundreds, literally, of near-death experiences, all saying that we're on this world together and we're all in some very important way connected. You know, I hope that would help lead to a discussion, a change in the world as that awareness grows to a more peaceful, loving, cooperative world. And goodness knows we need that now more than ever. Mm. I think also people, it sort of affects their self-awareness, the profound love God has for them. No matter what they've done on earth or haven't done, they're still it's almost like a self-identity. They're now that beloved child of God having an earthly life and will go on after they die into the afterlife. And then just the sense that as difficult as this earthly life is, literally for all of us, there is that wonderful afterlife that lies ahead. We'll be with our loved ones that we lost, and that really is our destiny. And that is a profoundly powerful message of hope and reassurance to many.
How can people find out more about your work?
Sure. All you have to do is look up certainly the website is NDERF, stands for Near Death Experience Research Foundation, NDERF.org, and that will contain the links to my two books.
Okay, listen, Dr. Jeffrey Long, I want to thank you for being with us. Dr. Long is the author of God in the Afterlife, the groundbreaking new evidence for God and near-death experience, and that was released in paperback in June 2017. Dr. Long, thank you so much for being here and sharing your work. We really appreciate it.
McNair, thank you. Fantastic interview. Greatly appreciated.
You've been listening to A Better World on 103.7 WPVM FM, brought to you each Thursday afternoon from 5 to 6 p.m. This is McNair Ezard. Thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you next week on A Better World. And we're going to go out today with Bob Dylan's Knockin' on Heaven's Door.
It can't dark.